This podcast is brought to you by N by Neutralite, exclusively from Amway, created to empower your mind and enrich your body to help you be more you. Because you are unstoppable, and N products will help you meet your goals every day. Because with N by Neutralite, you got this. Follow us on Instagram at NeutralightUS.
It's Inside the Amway Coaches Poll from USA Today Sports, the college football podcast that gives fans the inside scoop on who's moving up, who's moving down, and what's happening with all the big news of the week. Dan Wolken and Paul Meyerberg will take you through this week's poll,
interview coaches,
and break down the sport like nobody else, starting now.
All right, welcome to the Inside the Amway Coaches Poll podcast presented by USA Today Sports. I am Dan Wolken, joined by Paul Meyerberg today. And since the last time we talked, man, there's been a lot of crazy stuff happening in college football. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 have announced that they will not play football or any fall sports this year. They're going to try to play in the spring, so it's more of a postponement than a cancellation, but obviously no guarantees. They've been joined in that decision by the Mid-American Conference, by the Mountain West. That leaves six of the 10 FBS conferences still trying to play football this year. And really, I guess, Paul, what it's going to come down to is just the next couple weeks as teams start getting into practice and students start coming back to campus, how successful they can be in pulling this off, frankly, without their entire school getting overrun with COVID. I mean, I really think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows the answer to that question? I mean, you can only look at, just look across the country to see when things have opened up historically in the last 5 months in certain states, you've seen a spike. And not to say that a campus is a state, but still you see similar idea, right? You have people flowing back into one location, coming from different areas. I mean, even in big state schools, you have people coming from outside the state, potentially even outside the region. So it's the big question mark in college athletics. And we don't know the answer. But I think just we've seen enough to, at this point, be a little bit cynical about how they're going to pull it off. If they can, we'd be ecstatic. But I don't know if we have any idea at this point how it's going to play out.
All right, well, on today's podcast, we're going to talk about that and more with Mark Richt, the former coach of the Georgia Bulldogs and the Miami Hurricanes, who is now working for the ACC Network. Will he coach again? That's one of the things that we talked with him about. So interested to hear his take on everything that's going on. And then also Ryan Aber from the Oklahoman, who covers the Oklahoma Sooners. They've had a really interesting offseason and, frankly, not great news for Oklahoma over the weekend. So we will talk about that with him. But, you know, Paul, it's really been an interesting past weekend in college football because in the wake of the Big Ten's decision, you've seen a couple things happen. One is just a big backlash to the decision that they made. And you've seen it from some of the athletes. Justin Fields put out a petition online. It's as of Monday, it's got a couple hundred thousand signatures. There was obviously some displeasure at places like Nebraska. You know, clearly there were fact forces at Iowa and Penn State and even Ohio State that really wanted to play. And I think complicating all of it is just the fact that Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, the way it was rolled out looked kind of clunky. I mean, 1 week, literally less than a week before they announced they're shutting down, the Big Ten releases the schedule. And you can understand why the whiplash from releasing the schedule to canceling the season has left a lot of people looking for answers.
Yeah. I don't know how you feel about how the Big Ten has come out of this looking as a conference. I thought that it was buffoonish and I think that they couldn't have done much worse on this. And let's not even get into the decision itself, which may be the right one. We'll find out. It probably is, but the timing of it seems also just completely off the mark. I don't know. It's obvious, and we don't know the numbers. It's obvious just based off the reaction that when they were in that room of 14 people making that decision, that it wasn't unanimous. And I don't know if that decision wasn't unanimous, why the league felt pressured on that sort of timeline to make this decision when they could have just pushed back to September 26th, like every other league, and started the season a little bit later and given themselves more time. I don't really know. like where I've come down on it at this point is there's an obvious disconnect between the conference and several of its members. There's a disconnect between what the conference thinks its members think. And also, it just seems like this wouldn't have happened with the Big Ten 2 or 3 years ago with the previous leadership. I feel like it would have been more lockstep.
Well, and I do think it's totally fair to say that if you're going to make a decision of this magnitude for your conference, you need to be able to explain it in very clear terms. You know, and I think the Pac-12 was able to successfully do that. I mean, and the situation out in California with the Pac-12 is very different. There's a lot of these schools that just because of local ordinances or state ordinances just couldn't practice. You know, they were going to have a hard time actually just practicing and staying within the rules. So when you factor all that in, yes, there's a myocarditis issue. You know, yes, there's a community spread issue. It's not just one thing. Yes, there's a testing issue. All right. But when you roll it out the way the Big Ten did, then you leave yourself vulnerable to all these talking points, and you need to put your medical people out front. That's what the Pac-12 did. But the Big Ten didn't do that. They put their commissioner out front, and he just didn't have a lot of good answers. Now, look, I can say in this situation that, you know, maybe Nebraska was a little too aggressive in the way they reacted to it, and I thought their administration kind of came off looking a little bit ridiculous, just throwing red meat to the base. But there's no doubt, like, if you've got a contentious decision within your conference, maybe it's not unanimous, but maybe it needs to be a little bit more everyone on the same page than it was. That's all.
Yeah, this is what I was about to ask you. If you think that this decision needs to be unanimous, no. But don't you think that it needs to, like, if Nebraska and Iowa are your outliers and Ohio State and Penn State are not in that group, maybe you can make that decision. But don't you think as a conference, it's August 10th, it's August 11th, if you don't have not just your most powerful name in Ohio State, hypothetically, but also, like, brand names, national brand names that people on both coasts know. I don't know how the Big Ten can make the decision. Or let me rephrase, because I know you agree that it doesn't need to be unanimous. But why do you think they made the decision? Why was it that they felt the need to do it then? Why couldn't they have waited? I mean, every other conference is waiting. The Pac-12 wasn't going to wait if the Big Ten went ahead, but you're obviously seeing three other leagues wait and be more patient.
Well, and it's interesting because for all of the crap I get on Twitter about you want to cancel the season, you want to cancel the season, and I've been getting it for months, that's never actually been true. I mean, what I've written many, many times was that all college football needed to do in this situation was just to hold off. And at some point, probably about now, I think it would have been perfectly reasonable for people to say, all right, the start of the season's happening way too fast. Let's push this out to October. Let's just wait for, you don't know about any sort of positive developments in terms of testing or treatments. You don't know about what the national numbers are going to be that far ahead. Maybe they come down in some way that better allows you to have a season. And then also, I think just the biggest thing is understanding the effect of COVID once you open up your college campus to regular students, because all summer long these programs have been able to build, it's not a bubble, but they've been able to, with limited contact, no contact, small groups working out together, they can say, you know, we can do this in a very safe and responsible manner, and if guys don't go out to parties or do all that kind of stuff, we can have a pretty COVID free environment. But the big wild card, and we've been talking about it for a long time, is just when students come back to campus, that could be the thing that has this all haywire. But, you know, so to me, like, the SEC did not make a bad decision by moving off to late September. That's exactly what I've advocated for all along, just so you can find out more information. Now, the other leagues may end up getting to the same place the Big Ten got to, and I trust them and their presidents when they say that the medical information was overwhelming. But I don't know that you needed to make the decision the first week or second week of August.
What are the, well, maybe not the ramifications, because A, the idea that, you know, a team like Nebraska's leaving the conference is obviously idiotic. But how do you heal the rift? Because obviously there's a rift. Is it just by saying, hey, next year we're going to pay you $50 million to play on ESPN? You'll play Purdue at noon on a Saturday and we'll give you some money? Is that how you heal it? Or do you need to do more than that if you're the Big Ten? Because clearly, like, saying that Nebraska and Chicago as locations, they're both Midwest, but not quite. There's a little bit of nuance there, just like New York and Maine are both Northeast, but you wouldn't confuse an Italian guy from the Lower East Side with a Mainer. You know what I mean? There's different personalities there. So how do you, is the first step to understand your membership a little bit better? And then to say to Nebraska, hey, you know, we'll value your input. We'll value the input of our teams more in the future. I just don't know how you get them back to the table together.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, from what I was told, the athletic director, the president, and even the governor of the state were all fairly in line that they felt like they could play. And that's why you heard all this noise about them looking for games outside the Big Ten. I don't think it's possible within the bylaws of the league to do that and still remain a member of the Big Ten. Maybe a lawyer could figure it out. But yeah, I do think there's a rift. And I do think that, you know, if the Big Ten is sitting here on the sidelines and some of these other leagues are playing and they're somehow able to pull it off, there's no doubt that Kevin Warren, I think immediately, I don't want to say his job's in peril, but I do think that his credibility as a leader of the league will be pretty badly damaged.
Yeah, well, that's where we are with the Big Ten Pac-12. Hey, who would have guessed? We could have guessed a week ago that those two leagues were going to take a step back. Who would have guessed that the Pac-12 would have orchestrated it better than the Big Ten? That's the surprising point.
The Pac-12 has not orchestrated a whole lot of things better than anyone in the last half dozen years. All right, let's bring in Mark Richt and look forward to getting his thoughts on everything.
Inside the Amway Coaches Poll from USA Today Sports.
Big time coaches feel big time stress. And by Nutrilite, less stress, more yes, great-tasting mango lemon gummies help you find your zen. It's made with L-theanine, a natural amino acid known to help reduce occasional stress, and lemon balm, used traditionally as a calming botanical. You can feel free from all the nasties like artificial flavors, sweeteners, and colors, plus it's vegetarian-friendly. So when you prepare for the big game, feel less stress with N by Nutrilite, less stress, more yes gummies. And stay tuned after the podcast to learn about stress and how to manage it with stress authority and clinical investigator, Dr. Jennifer Chang, PhD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and the product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Now, back to Inside the Amway Coaches Poll with Dan Wolken and Paul Meyerberg.
Dan Wolken and Paul Meyerberg here, and happy to be joined now on the Inside the Amway Coaches Poll podcast by Mark Richt. You guys know Mark Richt, former coach at Miami, former coach at Georgia, one of the most successful coaches in the history of the Southeastern Conference. Coach, thanks for joining us. Just how's everything been going? How have you been handling the pandemic and all the uncertainty of everything the last few months?
Well, as it turned out, I was already retired when this thing started, and we had made a decision to move to Destin, Florida on the beach. So my wife and I are in a two-bedroom condo on the 11th floor right on the water. And so that's how we spent our isolation time. It wasn't too bad. We actually felt kind of guilty that life was actually very good for us to spend time with each other, being empty nesters. And it just very wild to watch everything on TV. But we were kind of sheltered from it, quite frankly.
What's your just general assessment of the situation with regard to college football? Obviously, the news changes every day, but it just is almost a little bit surreal right now because you've got teams in the SEC, ACC, and the Big 12 who are preparing for a season. It's obviously not a normal season, but they're preparing for a season. They've got openers that they're trying to prepare for, and yet you've got four FBS conferences that have decided they're not going to play. I know that none of us could have imagined anything like that, but just emotionally, as somebody who loves college football, is it difficult for you right now to just to kind of see what's happened?
Well, it is, and I feel for everybody having to try to deal with it and figure out what to do. You know, a lot of people have asked me, what do you think you'd do, Coach? And quite frankly, I'm not privy to the meetings with the ADs and the presidents and the head coaches like I used to be, and you know, all the, you know, the experts when it comes to health and well-being, you know, whoever everybody's relying on by a league or by a school or even by a team. I don't know all those things, but it makes sense to me that You just have to decide where are the players and their families most safe. Are they safer on campus where they're being monitored, where they're being tested, where if something comes up, they can be treated immediately, or is it better off for everybody to be on their own? Which, you know, that's the thing that's got to be decided. And I think that's what everybody's been mulling over is, you know, where are the guys most safe? And obviously everybody wants to play, but, you know, you want to play, you know, safely.
I mean, the thing is coaches are so wired to focus on the players getting better and winning football games. Obviously the jobs you've had, there's a lot of pressure to win. Is this going to be a different season for coaches this year? Just assuming there is a season, just given all the unknown factors. I mean, not to say there's not pressure to win, but it almost seems like the whole point this year is just to get to the finish line. Or do you think it'll be more like a normal season where you lose a game and people go crazy?
I think the games will still be very meaningful. Maybe not quite as much. I liken it a little bit to 9/11, that season. We know the horrible things that happened in New York, and then it just shook the nation, and everything shut down. We didn't play football that very next weekend, and everybody was deciding, should we play, should we not? Is it safe? Is it not? Is it even right to do that when everything else is going the way it is? And we made a decision to play. We made a decision to go, and there were some people that weren't happy with that, but I think in a lot of ways – we can't live by fear, and we've got to sometimes got to step out and make decisions because there is risk. There's risk in football. Every, you know, football is a very physical combat sport, and every time those kids play, there's a chance of somebody getting hurt. We know that. Now you got COVID, which is a different kind of risk, but that risk is there whether you play football or not. So, you know, again, you got to figure out where are these guys the most safe? And I'll say this too. Coaches care about winning, no doubt, and they certainly feel the pressure to do so. But I've hardly met a coach that in my gut didn't believe, truly loved those kids and wanted what's best for them and wanted to do, you know, what is the most safe thing for them. They recruit these guys. They get to know these guys as people. They know their families. They have an obligation to take care of them. And I think every coach does that. And sometimes we lose sight of that, I think, in the middle of the season, maybe when you're just battling for your life and your job. But for the most part, everybody's looking out for those kids.
If the season does get moved to the spring, that's a hypothetical. Maybe you won't play till next fall. But let's say you do play in the spring. If you were coaching a team, would you think about how can I keep this team motivated or how can I keep my guys interested without that payoff? You know, because they've been working for 8 months, right, and then you don't get to play on Saturdays. Would that be a concern of yours that they would lose focus in the interim?
Right. Well, it'd be a concern for me right now, even if the teams do play, because every other day it's like, are we playing? Are we not? I mean, even today where we're speaking on this podcast, not 100% sure there's even going to be any season whatsoever in the fall. And, you know, I think there's other sports you can play when your mind's not on it and not be at risk of getting hurt. I mean, you could golf and just not have your mind on golf, and you're probably not going to get hurt golfing or playing soccer or basketball. I mean, there's some sports that are more physical in nature than others, but if you play football and your mind's not on the game, that's a dangerous place to be. So without question, I'd be very concerned about the player's mindset. I remember when the hurricane came through a couple of years ago, and, you know, we chose to cancel a game or two and try to decide what's the best thing for our players. And the number one reason why I did not want to play the game was, even though I think we might have been away at that time and the players might have been safe, but everybody back at home, you know, that's when this hurricane was supposed to hit, right about when we were supposed to kick off. So I'd have a room full of kids that are thinking about their mom and dad and grandmother and grandfather and their aunts and uncles. Is everybody safe? Is everybody going to be okay? I didn't want them thinking about all that and then trying to play a football game. It's just not safe for them to do that.
Do you think a spring season is viable? I know that's a topic that's gotten a lot of very extreme opinions. Sure. I've heard people say it's just impossible. And yet there's some other coaches and administrators who think there's a way you could possibly pull it off.
I think you could do it. I don't know if I know everybody wouldn't like it, and there'd be probably more kids that would opt out of that, especially guys with 1 year of eligibility. But, you know, there's a lot more kids out there who are playing their last season that aren't going to be first round draft picks, and they understand that. And they just want to play the game. They want to play their senior season. If you're going to try to play in the spring, I'd consider maybe starting in December. I mean, who says you can't start in November, December?
Yeah.
Play December, January, February, maybe be finished by, you know, early March or something like that, and give you some time in between the next season. We are used to spring football. We still put pads on. We still play football in the spring. It's just not quite as much, obviously, as a season. But I think that, you know, from a financial point of view, football needs to be played for all the other sports. It needs to be played, you know, just for the fan base in general. And if you don't play for an entire season, there's going to be a lot of teams that fall by the wayside and maybe never come back. I was on the American Football Coaches Association Board of Trustees, and the American Football Coaches Association, that group talks about every level of football. You know, Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, junior college football. I mean, just football in America is what it's about. And if you don't have certain games for these people to get, for these teams to get the money that they need to not only support their sport, but the rest of their sports, those football teams don't exist anymore. And, you know, how many thousands of kids would lose the opportunity to have that experience of football, which we know is one of the toughest things kids do nowadays in our country. I think we're getting soft to a certain degree, but football is not a soft sport. It's a tough sport. And I think it helps build good men in a lot of ways.
No, you can play in the spring, but do you think you can play in the spring and the fall based on what you know about recovery time?
When you finish.
Yeah. Well, how about this idea, right? This is what I've been thinking about. What if you play, you said December, right? What if you go December to March and you play seven games, or you play six games with some sort of postseason, but then you come back in the fall and you play part two and you play games 8 through 12, 8 through 13. So 2021 is one full season. Is that a good idea or is that a terrible idea?
It's an idea. I just think the problem is you would be fielding two, very different football teams.
That's a problem.
You know, you'd right? have, in the spring, you'd have your seniors, and then in the fall, you'd have a different group of seniors for the same season. And I don't think that would fly with everybody's mindset of having some kind of closure for a season. I think you'd have to play it, whether you play it in the, you know, and if you finish the spring with a playoff, and it's, I mean, you know, what about the bowl games? I mean, it's just so wild to even think about it, but. If you don't play the ball at all for a year, I do think there's going to be some teams that are just laying by the wayside.
Regardless of how this all ends up happening and who ends up playing, how do you think college athletics is going to change as a result of just what's happened this whole year?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously the players are getting a bigger voice. Obviously, things are changing. I mean, this one-time transfer rule comes in, that's huge. It's a lot bigger than – maybe everybody thinks, you know, for anybody to leave a team anytime they want and be eligible immediately, it's going to change things in a very big way. You know, so there's more of a freedom for the players to have a say into how their careers go. And that's not the only way they're going to have that ability. I think, you know, if they get paid for their likeness, you know, how's that going to work? It's going to be hard to manage and figure out what's best. And are these guys employees? Are they not? Do they pay taxes? Can you fire them? Do you cut down the number of players because it costs too much to pay them? I mean, whatever it may be. Again, there's some Power Five schools that could probably handle it pretty good financially, but the rest of the world doesn't operate that way. I mean, even some Power Five schools are barely making it. People don't want to believe that. There's a lot of big Power Five schools that are, you know, just making ends meet when it comes to payroll of all the other sports and the coaches and the travel and all the things we do for the well-being of the player. A while back, I had my director of football figure out how much money do we spend per year per student athlete on the football team, and it was close to $200,000 to $250,000 a year that we spend on food and travel and housing and doctors and you know all the things that we do for the players. So you know it's hard for people to make it. sometimes they're just making it by the skin of their teeth.
So we are operating under the assumption there is going to be a football season. We can't let you go without getting your assessment of the ACC. You have done a lot of work and continue to work with the ACC network. And then also Georgia. I know people are interested in your opinion on what they're doing at Georgia this year. They've got a really interesting quarterback situation, although JT Daniels apparently has not been cleared yet to play. Kind of what's your assessment of, you know, is Clemson still the dominant program?
Right.
ACC right
now?
Well,
I don't think there's any doubt Clemson's a dominant program. But as we all know, Notre Dame is all of a sudden, they are in the ACC. They're in the conference. They're playing a conference schedule. They're playing for the chance to win the conference championship. It's probably a one-year deal, but all of a sudden that adds a lot of spice to the league. North Carolina is very strong this year. I think they're only going to be better than they were a year ago. Got a tremendous quarterback in Sam Howell, and all of his weapons are back, and the defense is better. I think Louisville is a dark horse for the league title, and Louisville has got a quarterback named Mikael Cunningham, who I think is lights out. You know, Wake Forest obviously lost Jamie Newman to Georgia, and Georgia certainly is going to benefit from him. And I know that the other kid you mentioned has a possibility, but Jamie Newman, in my opinion, is not a good player, but a great player. And I think Georgia's going to have what they need at that position to win.
You like that fit, him going there as a grad transfer?
Well, it you know, I hate it for Wake. I hate it for teams that, you know, develop these guys and then all of a sudden – they dip out and go. But, you know, I don't feel as bad when a kid's a graduate transfer as I probably would if he's a second-year player. You know, somebody signs him, gets a gym. He has a great big year of freshman year, and then everybody's in the country's recruiting him and stealing him from a program who, you know, ought to reap the benefit of helping him be great. But, you know, I don't blame Jamie for wanting to do that. He got his degree at Wake and played, you know, great for them, and he wants to take a shot at that. You know, I mean, there's no guarantee he's going to be the starter, but I think the guy's a really good player, and I think he's a high draft pick.
Mac is a decade older than you, just about, and he took some time away and was obviously recharged by UNC. When you speak to him, when you look at that program, you're right. 2 years removed from your last time on the sideline. Is there any part of you that thinks, oh, it's August, I smell the grass, it feels like football season, and you want to go back? Any part of you feel that way?
Yeah, not yet, especially this year. I've kind of been glad I'm not dealing with it. If it was a normal year, maybe so.
Yeah.
And I'm getting, you know, closer to – I will say this. I work for the ACC Network. I'm the national spokesman for the North American Mission Board. I've got a lot of speaking engagements coming up. I'm writing a book. You know, so I am staying busy, and I got a lot of things going on. I think God still – wants to use me in a big way, and I'm kind of anxious to see what that's going to be.
Any hints about what your book's about, or is it still a secret?
Mostly a memoir of my life as a coach. And, you know, there'll be something in there for the real rabid football fan, but it'll be a lot about real life, you know, real life and my faith and how it all works together.
Good.
We will look forward to that. Mark, thanks so much for joining us on the Inside the Amway Coaches Poll podcast. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and hope you and your family are staying safe.
All right, thank you, guys. I appreciate the chance.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Inside the Amway Coaches Poll from USA Today Sports.
All right, thanks to Mark Richt for joining us on the Inside the Amway Coaches Poll podcast. Paul, I want to talk a little bit right now about the playoff. And you don't have the Pac-12, you don't have the Big Ten. Let's just assume for a second that the leagues who are currently planning to play are able to play. What do you do? Can you have a playoff under these circumstances?
Yeah, it's how many million dollar question? $100 million question? More?
I'm
just going year by year. You know, okay, so this is what we know, because I've talked to Bill Hancock and spoken with people at the playoff. They're going, as of right now, off the assumption that all those teams currently playing will keep playing, and they will stick to the same protocol, you know, conference championships, all that stuff. obviously they can't use head-to-head results and common opponents. So they're going to use the protocol they have at their disposal and try to make a decision. That's where they're going as of now. I think the big question is not whether they can do it, because they can do it because, like we said, there's a million and million and million reasons to do so. I think the question is whether it's reasonable. And I don't think college football, reasonably speaking, can conduct a playoff without a full roster of teams. I don't think it's reasonable to do that. And I don't know if they will or won't. I just don't think that when you put all those people in a room for their board, all those presidents and chancellors that represent other conferences, you have Ohio State president on there, whether they will decide that it's okay to go ahead, I don't think it's reasonable to do so.
Well, look, the other fall sports, by edict from the NCAA, if they fall under 50% participation, then you, what Mark Emmert said on Friday, you don't have a legitimate national championship. Now, you know, we're not there yet with the 50% threshold in FBS, but if, you know, you have another league drop out, I mean, you basically are down to 50%, more or less.
You're at 76 right now. Right. So you lose one more league, you're halfway there. And I don't know if, I mean, what is the point of the playoff was to streamline the national conversation about the championship. I mean, obviously to clear it up so you can have a clean championship, but also to remove the feeling that I was robbed. And, you know, that's human nature and we still see it. But if you're going to take a step back like that 23 years to 97 or before, and not to mention not even have a real postseason, because they're not going to have a real postseason otherwise, it seems jerry-rigged. And I think the playoff and those people who determine whether it goes on will have to decide whether or not in this kind of scenario where COVID's out there, teams can't play, is it right to jerry-rig a championship and to create that out of nothing just for money? I mean, the answer might be yes, but I just don't – it's a emotional question for sure, an emotional answer, but I just don't know if they can justify it.
Well, the other factor in it is ESPN will have a say for sure. They own the rights. They stand to make or lose a lot of money too, because that's a game that they sell to their advertisers, and they need to recoup some of the money that they're paying to the college football playoff in these schools. I think.
But how do you play in the fall and then go back in the spring? Like, what do you do for Ohio State in the spring? You say, hey, thanks for playing? I mean, that's the problem, right?
Well, what if in the spring you just took the winner of the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and then you just play in the Rose Bowl in April? That'd be okay.
Sure. How about the team that wins the championship in December takes a couple months off and plays the winner of the spring season, and we have a winner take all?
Well, that's not going to happen. That's not.
I'm just saying, while we're like Mark Rick said, it's an idea. It's not a good one, but it's an idea. Why would we take a step back? I mean, money.
Right.
Answer to everything is money. This is what I found, is that money is usually the answer.
Well, the other big hurdle to a playoff is just the logistics of it. And look, I think that the college football playoff, as good as they are at just building an event, and they're very good at that, that they could come up with some type of bubble scenario for the teams. And maybe you just pick a single site. Maybe you just, instead of doing the ties to all the bowl games, maybe you just have everyone come down to Atlanta. And, you know, they got big hotels within walking distance of the stadium, and you keep four teams in four different hotels, and then you test them all, and you play, you know, your two semifinals back to back, and then you play your championship game a week later, and you keep everybody within the bubble. Like, I think you could do that. The problem becomes just the time between the end of the season and whatever the postseason is going to be. Like, that's why I think a lot of these bowl games are probably in trouble, because just take as an example, you know, South Carolina is going to end up as a, you know, a 5-5 or a 4-6 team that gets invited to the Independence Bowl. And once the season ends, you're going to sit there and tell me that, like, you want to keep those kids around. And also everyone else has gone home for Thanksgiving. It's the season's done. The semester's done. You're going to sit there and tell me that South Carolina is going to keep a bunch of kids on campus for weeks and weeks to go practice and prepare to play an Independence Bowl? Like, that just doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. I think Atlanta's probably the wrong place for a bubble. If we want to keep them you want to like do a bubble. Does Peoria have a stadium? I'm just thinking, like, where could you put four football teams? You're like, hey, you got to hang out. Please don't go outside.
Well, I mean, if we're expanding the imagination a little bit, I would pick Reykjavik.
Sure. I play on the moon. I think the real – I just hope at some point in our lifetimes we'll have a bowl game on the moon. It'd be the Moon Bowl, the NASA Bowl. I mean, in all seriousness, though, it's going to confuse people because you're simultaneously – you've canceled the season, but also you're Mr. Bubble. So you're trying to find ways to have a season, which is going to – all your Twitter followers are probably going to be a little bit lost here. But I think you're right about the bubble and the playoff. I think if you can – the playoff almost is conducive to being held if you can schedule it, because you can create that bubble to a degree, because no one's going to be near their home anyway.
And look, if you end up at the end of the season, like you probably will, with Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia, and Clemson, it will still feel like a legitimate playoff. Now, yeah, some people will say it won't be because you won't have the Big Ten and the Pac-12. But like, if you have four teams in that playoff that are traditional powers, I think people will largely accept that as a legitimate playoff.
Right, except two-fifths of your Power Five will not.
Oh, yeah. I'm just –
that's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, look, here's another thing, right? I mean, maybe by December you have testing in place that works. I mean, let's not even talk about a vaccine, but maybe you have a testing method in December that you don't have now that would allow you to do this.
Well, let's talk about testing, because over the weekend there was a pretty big story, not just for sports, but just for society, that the FDA has approved a saliva test that has been developed by Yale University. We had a story on USA Today Sports about the NBA funding some of the research into that and the development of it. And the idea behind this test is, instead of having the stick up your nose, which I've heard is quite unpleasant. I have not had it. Have you been COVID?
It's not great. Yeah, I've had two.
Really?
It's not that bad. I mean, it goes pretty far up there. It lasts longer than you think, but it's not that bad. I mean, I'd rather have that than have a shot or a needle drug.
Really?
For sure.
Yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Just pokes your brain. It feels fine.
See, I think I'd rather have the shot, but.
Yeah, a shot. Okay. I'm not scared of needles. But nonetheless, the blood being drawn out of my arm is always a weird, and I'm not a big fan of that. So I'd rather have the stick up the nose than that.
All right, well, regardless, the saliva test would be a lot better, right? It would be a lot more.
For sure. Pleasant. Right. And it allows you to do, it's not just cheap. It allows you to do a lot of them and get results back quickly. And I mean, obviously those all go hand in hand, but if you're talking about an inexpensive, quick turnaround and you can pull off a lot of them in a day, seems like 110, 150 team, you know, program counting staffers, that's kind of a recipe for being able to make this work theoretically.
See, this is the issue that I've been concerned about most with regard to football, is just you have so many people around a football program. It's not just the players, and there's a lot of players. It's the support staffers. It's the equipment managers. It's the people who do the laundry. It's just everyone is in and out of that locker room. And so this whole idea of testing once a week or twice a week or even three times a week, I mean, to me, that's just got so many holes in it. You talk to people like Zach Binney, who's, you know, the epidemiologist who's on Twitter, who has been commenting on a lot of sports issues. You know, he'll say, yeah, you know, maybe you can get away with it. It's kind of the bare minimum. But it leaves you a window of exposure. Somebody who's asymptomatic comes in the locker room and spreads it. And also, you know, the other part about this, and I think we're already seeing this play out at some schools, Florida State was a notable example last week, are people being honest about symptoms? You know, whenever you're relying on people to speak up and say, I have a sore throat, I've been coughing, I don't feel good, that's a really dangerous game, because football players, not just football players, I mean, a lot of us have just been conditioned our whole life that, like, unless you're literally in the bed shaking, that you go to work. You work. That's what you do. You don't take the day off. And especially football players, you miss a practice, you're not going to start in the game that weekend. You don't want to do that. So can you be honest, or are people going to be honest to say, I don't feel good, I need a test right now? See, to me, the saliva test just eliminates all that those issues. You just test everybody every day. You have, if it's accurate, and it proclaims to be pretty accurate, you've got a really good idea of who's walking in every single day with COVID. And that's the way to manage it. That's the way to have sports. So if you can get this test, if you can get it turned around really fast, and if you can scale up the production of it where we can literally test everybody every day who's playing college football, then yeah, that could be a game changer. I hope it is.
Yeah, no, I agree. Look, the one thing that I thought was a concern back in March, April, May, and a lot of coaches agreed, was that openness, you know, like, you don't want to lose your spot on the depth chart. You want to talk about the fact that you got a sore throat, you might miss 3 days of practice or more. So yeah, I think you need to clear that hurdle. And like you said, the easiest way to clear that hurdle is not just making tests easy, but making it them plentiful. And this could do that. And look, and like you just said, right, about being able to do this as a way to salvage the season, like, it, being able to play college football is not, it's not like climbing Kilimanjaro or Everest. I mean, there are just certain things that you need to have. You got to have testing. You have to have protocol for dealing with positive tests. And you need to make sure that the people you're playing or the people who are coming into your program follow the same guidelines. I mean, it's just a number of steps. They're complicated steps, but it's not like this is impossible to pull off. And the saliva test, if it's valid and viable, it kind of takes one of those, it kind of checks one of those the boxes on one of those. And I think it's obviously a positive development. Problem is, it's August 17th. You have time to put that into effect and play in a month.
Meanwhile, I'm seeing all these tweets on from these college football players all over the country, notably Alabama, Auburn, and they're basically like taking pictures out on their campuses of people not wearing masks, gathering at the bars. Greg Byrne, the Alabama athletic director, took a picture of a bunch of people in line to, I guess, get into this bar in Tuscaloosa saying, who wants college sports this fall? Obviously not these people. We've got to do a better job than this for each other and for our campus community. Please wear your masks. I mean, I hate to break it to you, Greg, but like, the regular student at Alabama, like, if you can't party and get drunk, I don't think the average Alabama student even sees the point of football. I mean, sure, they like football and it's a cool thing to go do and nice that they win, but like, I think most of those people, if you gave them an option of being able to go to the bars and spread COVID to each other or go to a football game, they would choose go to the bars and spread COVID to each other. It's just the way college kids are.
Yeah, if you take alcohol, parties, recreational paraphernalia out of college, it just becomes work. That's called work. Like, you just go to school and then you go to bed and you don't really do anything, you know, like, that's work. So yeah, I understand. Like, if I'm 19 years old, Alabama, Clemson, well, maybe not Clemson, but Alabama, pretty much any other school that's still going on, even Boston College. Yeah. You take away my right to party on Friday and Saturday nights, you can keep your football. I mean, might as well join the army at that point and get out and get the GI Bill or something like that. So yeah, you know what? Not surprised that you're seeing those long lines. You know, also not surprised that you're not seeing anyone wear a mask in line.
I mean, listen, if you really think that like the threat of taking away football matters to students at Alabama, they had to put a freaking phone app in to give students bonus points to stay in their seats for an entire game. Like, they don't care. All right. They go there to party and get drunk and congregate and hook up or whatever they're going to do. Like, I just don't think that's going to work. And I don't think the football players taking pictures and putting them on Twitter is going to work. I don't think that's going to change behavior one bit. And I actually feel sorry for a lot of these guys because they have everything right. Like, most of the players, I mean, yeah, we had some issues early on and some people went to parties, but I think for the most part, if you talk to coaches and ADs, they feel like their athletes are doing it right. They're doing what they should be doing. And yet this is just like the most predictable thing in the world, because when you are relying on people between the ages of 18 and 22 to make good decisions in order for you to have a football season, then you might as well it's a wrap at that point. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I think 99% of student athletes have done the job. And imagine if you're a kid who got back on campus June 1st, since then you've been wearing a mask when you exercise, you know, you've been doing everything you have to do. It sucks. Everyone knows it sucks. I mean, going to the grocery store in a mask sucks. I mean, everyone can admit it. But imagine working out, doing all that. It sucks. And then, you know, Chad and Sebastian come back to the frat on August 20th, and they're just like chugging Natty Light with two packs of Bush on their shoulders, like coughing each other's face, sharing cigarettes. And you're like, I mean, come on, that's like, do the job. Like, I want to play football. This is my job. So I didn't mean to curse, but still, you gotta commiserate with the player at that point.
Chad and Sebastian, where do you come up with?
I was trying to think. What's Chad is definitely a stereotypical Johnny Frat-tastic name. I'm trying to think what the other frat boy name would be. Not a lot of Sebastians anymore. Maybe at University of the Sorbonne, there's some Sebastians. I don't know about, what's another frat name I could have used? Chad and Tucker?
It's pretty good. Yeah. All right, let's talk to Ryan Aber from the Oklahoma and find out what's going on with the Sooners.
Inside the Amway Coaches Poll from USA Today Sports.
All right, happy to be joined now by Ryan Aber from the Oklahoma, and he covers the Sooners in college football for one of our USA Today Network affiliates. And Ryan, it's been a really interesting weekend for the Sooners, highlighted, or I guess lowlighted, by the fact they had 9 positive COVID cases after a string of really clean test results. And I know a lot of people were very excited, thought Oklahoma was doing everything right. And then all of a sudden you get this outbreak on their team that nobody saw coming. So give us a little sense of what happened and where they go from here.
Well, what happened, OU, because of the uncertainty with their schedule, heck, the uncertainty with really what was going to happen in college football this year, Lincoln Riley decided to cut his players loose for 6 days starting Saturday night. They came back on Friday. And you combine that with, Lincoln said 25% of the players went ahead and went home, 75% stayed in Norman. The general student population moved in last week. The players are going to have so much more interactions with other people outside of just the football team. And they came back and have those 9 positive tests. And I think it highlights the difficulty of controlling the spread of this virus in an environment like college football, like a college campus in general, when that number of cases can happen that quickly.
Are people in Norman wearing a mask? Like, what's the mask situation in Norman?
There is a mask mandate in Norman. There are some people who are pretty fired up about it the opposite way. There's a recall effort actually on the mayor in Norman. There have been some threats and things like that against her. But, we've seen all around the country at these college campuses as kids have come back that, yes, there can be mask mandates and there can be things put in place to try to control this spread. But college kids just in general have a feeling of invincibility. And yes, they might not be the ones affected, at least immediately. We're still learning about, and we will learn for a long time, about the long-term effects of this virus. But, it can be really difficult, even with all those processes in place, to try to limit this thing.
I mean, that's the crazy part about this, Ryan, is, I had people on Twitter all the time telling me, hey, why don't you talk about the teams that don't have any positives? Why don't you talk about Oklahoma more? Why don't you talk about Boston College more? But, look, I have no problem talking about teams that don't have any positive tests. But when you talk to people on these campuses, and I had talked to people at Oklahoma, in fact, and they weren't doing any spiking of the football, because they had a bunch of good test results. I think you're only as good as your next test in this thing. So, I imagine at Oklahoma, I mean, I'm sure they're not thrilled about the situation, but they're taking it all in stride. So what is the mood about what happened and where they go from here? I mean, they just go back to practice or are they shutting everything down? How are they handling it?
Yeah, they continued with practice. They started back with practice. I believe their first one was Sunday upon their return after having some meetings Saturday, including some meetings with parents on the team. And like you said, you're only as good as your next test. Lincoln Riley has been pretty measured during this whole thing about taking the right approach and not – getting ahead of themselves. And I think OU certainly in this case isn't trying to get ahead of itself, and it wasn't before. But again, it highlights the difficulties is, you know, OU can do everything right to this point. And if one player goes out and does something, you know, maybe not something stupid, maybe he doesn't even go to a bar or be with people he's not supposed to be around, but just through the course of the things that he's got to do to get through the day, catches it, comes back and starts infecting a couple teammates, it can blow up really, really quickly. And then, you know, you multiply this across all of college football, or at least all of college football that's playing as of now, and it's still really difficult to manage. And I think this just highlights it because, as you said, OU was one of the ones that people had sort of held up as an example of a program that was doing things absolutely the right way.
Ryan, you look at the fan base as an OU fan base, or even just as a Norman as a location. Is there, or have people at all considered the fact that we might not play? Is that even part of the thought process? Are people, I mean, I wouldn't say willingly or choosing to be ignorant, but if do you sense within the fan base that there is, at least you're beginning to deal with the idea that this season might not go ahead as planned, even as things remain scheduled to do so next month?
You know, I think there's still a pretty big chunk of the fan base who is just full speed ahead, doesn't understand why the Tennessee and Army game got canceled, or why things are changing very often. But there's another pretty sizable chunk, and I think that chunk got larger on Saturday, of folks who are getting concerned or have been concerned about the viability of a college football season this year. And I think that this amplifies that. These testing results that came out over the weekend amplifies the fact that it might be difficult to continue to push forward if we don't see numbers like this, you know, if numbers like this keep getting repeated. And you would expect that they would get repeated at other places around the country as we move closer and closer to a supposed start to the football season.
The other big story from Oklahoma over the weekend is that Kennedy Brooks, the running back, really outstanding player, and was a guy that Oklahoma, I think, was going to rely on quite a bit this year, has now opted out. That's certainly not good news for what they want to do this year, assuming there's a season. Why did he opt out in your view, and what does that do to their team?
Well, I haven't talked to folks close to Kennedy since this happened. I've been trying to reach out to people, but talking to Lincoln Riley on Saturday, and you hear what he says about the opt-out process and that every player has to make their own decision. You know, Kennedy Brooks is a guy that some of us thought might leave after last year with the second straight 1,000-yard performance and was in a really good position. And I think for him and a lot of other players, it becomes a question of, what do you balance out what you could do this year and what this season would mean versus the future? And when you hear about some of the concerns that we've heard about with myocarditis and other things, I think it makes it much easier, especially in the environment now, to say, hey, I think it's better off if I take this year and try to avoid that and preserve health and maybe save yourself for a future where things are, you know, quote unquote, back to normal a little bit. I wouldn't say it was surprising that the Kennedy Brooks decided to opt out, but certainly the decision came pretty quickly, because when we talked to Lincoln on Saturday, he said at that time, no players had opted out, although that those conversations were ongoing.
I mean, this may be sort of a weird question, but no Kennedy Brooks, you don't have a big name transfer quarterback coming in like you had with Kyler Murray and Jalen Hurts. You don't have CeeDee Lamb. I mean, this is a crazy thing to ask about a Lincoln Riley offense, but are they concerned about the offense?
You know, I don't think so now overall. You know, Lincoln Riley, independently of the Kennedy Brooks decision, talked about how great he felt about other running backs on Saturday talked about their, or didn't talk about then, but they've got their offensive line intact. You've got a quarterback who is not going to be, at least now, what they've had the last few years, presumably a redshirt freshman, but I think that he's going to be really good. They feel all right about what they've got offensively one way or another, but in the short term, especially if you get somebody else opt out, I mean, heck, you know, I have no knowledge of anything like this, but, you know, say Creed Humphrey, a guy who has a chance to be a first round pick as an offensive lineman at center, decided to opt out. That all of a sudden changes the dynamic of this team completely, even more so than the Kennedy Brooks decision did. So it's going to be something that's going to be awfully fluid. So for now, not a big concern or not a massive concern, but it's certainly worth keeping an eye on, because this is a different type of offense than Oklahoma has had any year since Lincoln Riley got here because of some of those things.
Ryan, what would you do, like, if there was no season? Is there anything that, like, what would you do with your fall Saturdays? I'm trying to think, like, what I would do. It would be really funny if no football happened and then all of a sudden, like, we all discover that we're really good at physics or like, astrology. And we're like, oh, wow, I just cured this theorem. Like, do you know what you would do with your Saturday? First of all, I don't know the last time you had a free Saturday. I know Dan and I, for fall Saturdays, we're looking at 10 years or so. What about you?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, obviously, I get usually one or two off weeks during the year for OU where I can catch my breath a little bit. But as far as having more than that small number, and also during those times, there's always stuff you got to take care of. But it's been 20-something years wow. since I've had either a Friday or Saturday
wow.
you know, off in the fall. So it's going to be really different if that happens. I'm not sure what I would do. Probably, you know, fire up the smoker a fair amount, hang out on my deck since it's too dang hot here in Oklahoma yeah. to do that much now. You know, I started doing some little minor woodworking stuff in my garage when I can, although it's, again, too hot. So that's probably the kind of stuff I would do, but I got to say, I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I'm hoping there is a college football season. And I know, Dan, you've gotten this quite a bit, you know, this accusation of us in the media.
Right.
Saying
Dan canceled the season. Like, the Big Ten was going to play. And they were like, let's just check what Vulcan's tweeting one more time. And they're like, oh, crap, we can't.
Yeah, it's all.
So I don't know how Dan sleeps at night. Seriously. It's terrible. It's terrible.
None of us. I mean, I know Dan, Paul, both of you, you know, our job is so tied into college football and this season happening. None of us don't want it to happen. We want it to happen just for job security, if nothing else. But we've also got to be realistic about where things stand and also, you know, report both sides and talk about both sides. And a lot of times when that happens, you get accused of, you know, being negative and wanting to ruin the sport.
Well, I'd love to leave the Atlanta city limits again at some point, but not sure exactly when that's going to happen. All right, Ryan, let's get you out of here on this one. So is Spencer Rattler going to be a Heisman Trophy finalist next year, continuing what Lincoln Riley has done with his quarterbacks the last 3 years in a row?
Now, when you say next year, are you talking about
whenever the next year we play it?
Okay. I caught that too. Yeah.
if assuming a 2020 season, I don't anticipate Spencer Rattler being a Heisman Trophy finalist. Although I'm the one who wrote in a way that was completely complimentary about Baker Mayfield before he won the starting job. That, hey, this guy's never going to win a Heisman, but he can be a pretty good quarterback for you. Yeah, it turned out that was ridiculous.
That's one for the old takes exposed machine.
Yeah, and again, I was trying to be complimentary. Like, at that point, people
exactly.
were, nah, he's just a throwaway. He's never going to amount to anything. But I think there's a good chance that Spencer Rattler, at some point during his OU career, winds up in New York. I don't think it's going to happen immediately. I think that streak is likely to be broken. But you see in him, in just the three games that we got to see him in last year, the poise, the confidence, the accuracy, the arm strength, and some mobility to go along with it, which Lincoln Riley's really always had one way or another with his quarterbacks, although they've all been completely different players. You see the ability, the package that could make for something special where that could happen in the future. I think there's going to be some growing pains this year as they break him in, but I don't think there's any doubt that Spencer Rattler is going to be the starter against Missouri State unless something changes, unless there's an injury or, you know, something, some other circumstances dictate that. But Lincoln Riley's still going to continue to say they have a quarterback battle and that Tanner Mordecai has a chance, but this is as obvious of a quarterback choice, I think, as they've had in a long time.
All right, Ryan. Hey, man, thanks for joining us on the Inside the Amway Coaches Poll podcast. We'll look forward to catching up with you throughout the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime, guys, and thanks for having me on.
All right.
Thanks, Ryan.
That was Ryan Aber from the Oklahoman, the number six in the Amway Coaches Poll OU Sooners. I guess you move them up to number five now because Ohio State is not going to play. I'm not sure how that's going to work.
I think that they should leave all the teams in, personally, all just, season.
Just freeze them.
Yeah, like what? Like just because Ohio State's not playing, like they shouldn't. They're not the fifth best team in the country. That's what I think. They're not going to do that though. They're gonna knock everyone out. So yeah, they'll be number five week two or whenever the next one is, and yeah, Ohio State will be out of it.
Lost to history. All right, it was a good show today. Appreciate you guys joining us. If you like the podcast, please subscribe. Hit that like button. Give us all the five-star reviews. It certainly helps. For Paul Meyerberg, I'm Dan Wolkin. We'll talk to you soon on the Inside the Amway Coaches Poll podcast presented by USA Today Sports.
You've been listening to Inside the Amway Coaches Poll from USA Today Sports. Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jennifer Chuang, clinical researcher and nutrition investigator. Occasional stress is a very common occurrence within these unprecedented times. The world recently took a hard turn. Now your head is spinning. From occasionally forgetting things to trying to work while juggling family and finances. To top it off, you haven't even been able to go to the gym. It's okay though. Take a deep breath. Make self-care a priority by eating healthy, get your body moving throughout the day, and ample sleep should help. Here are a few additional ways you can use to help your mind reset. A few minutes of quiet meditation, taking a break from your screens, or taking time out with a friend are all techniques you can use to help your mind reset. You could also try a supplement, the perfect combination of L-theanine and lemon balm in N by Neutralite. Less stress, more yes gummies, soothes your mind and help reduce occasional stress. Using a stress supplement like N by Neutralite, less stress, more yes gummies can be a great low impact way to help you get in the zone and reduce your occasional stress.